Okay, good morning, everyone. This is Elizabeth Canuel, Chair of the Delta Independent Science Board. And I'd like to welcome everyone to day two of the Delta Independent Science Board meeting. So we'll begin with a roll call. And I doubt there have been changes in status overnight, but in the if there are, please indicate. Let's see. We'll start with Steve Brandt.
Steve Brandt, no new changes.
And we can just move around the table.
Tracy Collier, nothing happened overnight.
Tom Holzer, same status.
Joe Fernandez, no changes.
John Waynes, nothing new.
Vince Resch, no changes.
Jay Lund, a day older, a little less tired.
All right. Joyce Edler.
Joyce Edler, no changes.
And Richard Norgard.
Present, no changes.
Thank you, everyone. So just to review our agenda for day two, we will begin with a presentation about the overview of the interim comprehensive synthesis report. This is report three to inform the Delta ISB's monitoring enterprise review. The second item we'll cover this morning is a discussion and potential action on our review of the draft Delta plan ecosystem amendment and performance measures. Then we've moved an item from yesterday's agenda to today, and that will be an update on board activity related to the science needs assessment, and Steve Brandt and Jay Lund will report on that. And then we'll move into a discussion and potential action related to future Delta ISB reviews. We'll do our typical recap of the meeting and action items from this week's meeting, and then we'll move on to planning for future meetings. So if there are members of the public in the audience, or if they join us later, just a reminder to fill out and turn in a blue slip. If there are public comments on any specific agenda item, and again, a reminder, if you do have comments, to be sure to state your name and affiliation when you're invited up to the presenter's table. All right, so at this point, I'm going to turn things over to Vince Resch. He's going to be emceeing the presentation from ESSA this morning.
Well, thank you very much, Liz. Today we're going to have a presentation by two members of the group that's preparing our what we refer to as Component 1, which is the inventory tool and the documentation of the monitoring programs. And we have Mark Nellitz from ESSA and Tom Lagerquist from Pax Environmental Consulting. They're going to talk about the synthesis report, which is report three, which we'll be receiving soon. And also they're going to talk about updates to the inventory tool, which we discussed with them last night. So, Mark, are you going first? Or thank you very much for coming down from Vancouver.
Thanks and good morning, all. As has been mentioned, I'm Mark Nellitz. I'm with ESSA Technologies. I'm one of ESSA's adaptive management leads, and I'm managing the project for the review that we're doing. And Tom, I'll let you introduce yourself.
I'm Tom Lagerquist, an environmental and land use consultant with Pax Environmental, and I was assisting Mark with the monitoring inventory report.
So I'll take some time here to go through about, I think, 18 slides. So hopefully leave a little bit of time for questions. I believe I have an hour. Vince, is that about right? And I will talk about the inventory tool as well. I'll just show some screenshots. But so this is the interim version of report number three, which you'll receive shortly, but I wanted to start off with basically a little recap of where we are, just to remind folks of the work that we've been doing. And so there's two reports that have preceded this one. Also held a workshop last spring. There's a monitoring inventory, which is this inventory tool, is basically the database that we've been developing to populate all the information around the monitoring activities. It's in an online, not public yet, but it is an online tool to ultimately intending to make it accessible so people can query and search and interrogate that database. And certainly that's provided the foundation of information for the report, the information, the results, the analysis that's gone into report number three. And then report number three here is the final in the list, and this is the interim version, final to come in March. But on this report, the intent of it is really, given all this preceding work, to synthesize, to do a synthesis, to do a more of a meta-analysis, looking across many monitoring activities, looking at the big picture and broad patterns across the monitoring enterprise. And through our interactions with the smaller work group, we've identified and focused on a few review questions. And so we've looked at the inventory and trying to provide a response or some insights to those review questions. And then also in going through our work and given S's experience in adaptive management, also kind of broadly looked at how what factors might also be useful to enable adaptive management, monitoring in the context of adaptive management more broadly. So report as it's laid out here, introduction, context. Part of that introduction, given that I recognize that people are probably not going to be reading the two preceding reports, pulled forward some of the key findings from others' reports into the introduction here. Also lay out the approaches to our analysis, how we went about answering the questions. Section two is really focused on these broad review questions. Mentioned there's seven of them, and so we did some analysis, provide the results, some interpretations to those analyses. Section three is stepping back, looking a bit broader around some of the insights and enabling factors to support adaptive management. And then section four, key findings, recommendations, kind of really where we're bringing all this. It's under development, wanted to present the interim report, have a bit more guidance and discussion with the smaller group in terms of some of those. But I will just say the intent there is to recap some of the broad key findings of the work and really try to focus on discussing three, call these like, we should put those in quotes probably, but three big moves to strengthen monitoring adaptive management in the Delta. And I can touch on those a little bit, at least some of the early thinking around those things, but as I said, more discussion to be had around those. A variety of appendices, I won't get into all of these, but basically A through D are largely pulling forward materials from some of the previous reports and important pieces that have guided and framed and scoped our work. And so wanted to bring those forward, recognizing people wouldn't be going back to those other reports to cross-reference. And then E, F, and G here are really some of the key results and data around some of the network analysis that we did, because we appreciate that people are going to want to look into those a little bit more, understanding the organizations and how the network analysis defined them as influential in those networks, for example. So start off going through the report here. And I did want to say and start with to acknowledge and recognize, like, when we started this work a year ago, just over a year ago, and where we've come. I'd say in terms of the terms of reference, there were these four components here that were very broadly, loosely defined, without, I'd say, the precision and specificity that we needed to really dig in and do our work. And so our work did go through. As part of getting to the monitoring inventory, we needed to go through and flesh these things out. So what is a monitoring enterprise, for example? Well, you say physical, chemical, biological, socioeconomic monitoring. Well, what precisely does that mean? We talk about management needs. Again, what precisely does that mean? And then there's the inventory and analysis and synthesis itself. So in terms of that enterprise, well, acknowledged that monitoring is part of the science enterprise, which isn't new, but that there were many interrelated knowledge products. And so this is one of the I'll say challenges we overcame, but it was one of the challenges that when we spoke with folks about monitoring, for example, a lot of things were mentioned or we were referred to many, many different things, many of which I would say probably not monitoring per se in terms of how we defined it, if they're like derived data products, for example, from monitoring, but that's not the kind of source monitoring itself. So just understanding that spectrum of knowledge products within the science enterprise was important, as well needing to have a common definition. In our first report, we laid out, I think, some pretty standardized definitions, maybe not necessarily in the Delta, but in other places. And so we laid those out and also acknowledged that there is a bit of nestedness in terms of the way that we think of monitoring or people talk about monitoring, that there can be programs which include many activities. There's the activities themselves, and then within an individual activity, there may be different types of sampling that occur, and then that sampling can happen at many sites. Needed to lay all of those out and have a standardized, robust structure to account for all that information and that nestedness. So we're trying to do comparisons, equal comparisons across all activities. And then ultimately, where we got to with our inventory is 140 and growing. There's a few more that have been added. Activities related to 151 sampling activities related to over 4,000 sites. On the physical, chemical, biological, socioeconomic, we laid out an organizational framework for that, basically, which identifies 129 monitoring parameters, and we created a logical kind of nesting of those as well, which basically you'll see in some of the next coming slides, basically helps us stratify and resolve some of the complexity just to look at it in different ways through this hierarchical stratification. So out of those 129, we bundled them into these 24 monitoring themes and 4 monitoring categories. And another thing that was not necessarily easy to resolve or clarify through this work, but you know, came to a place at least is, well, what do we mean by socioeconomic monitoring? And so there was this millennial ecosystem assessment framework that we used, basically talked about it in terms of these 4 distinct types. And I'll just leave it to say that we focused on the direct socioeconomic drivers of ecosystem change, but there are other things. And this was partly just to keep our work within in scope and manageable, because this one it's a big one. It can be a very big one. The management needs, recognizing there's a large management enterprise, and we inventoried more than 50 management drivers, and we organized using the Delta Plan as a guide, organized those into 7 management themes and created a general topology of these 21 types of management actions. And through the workshop, I would say as well, also identified a very long list of policy management science questions. And all of these things are important if we're trying to get at the question, well, how well is monitoring serving the needs? And so then this comes to the inventory work itself and recognize that what we had to do involved 2 scales of research, one level targeted at a monitoring activity, just pulling together the metadata, and then there's the broader review questions, okay, when we're looking across all of those. What can we say and what can we understand? And then we pulled that all together into this online inventory tool with some analysis features that can be customizable by the user. So moving on to the insights that we've learned through the work. And so these are the broad review questions. I won't go through them one by one. I'll touch on them as I go through these, but I just wanted to remind folks that this is the scope and context of those. So starting with the first, and this potential gaps, redundancies, basically what we did for this is using these 7 management themes, and so this is around water supply, flood, invasive species, species management, habitat management, land use management. So for each of those, we acknowledge and recognize that there are different drivers of the decisions and the management actions within those themes. And related to those decisions, there are a set of monitoring parameters, and a lot of the drivers point to different monitoring parameters that are needed to help decision makers make their choices. And so as part of our work too, if we're going to identify gaps or redundancies, it needs to be, well, in reference to what? We need to have a bit of a benchmark or some reference point, because maybe everything that's there is fine as it is. And so we needed something to anchor against when we were doing our queries of the inventory. And so basically, for each of these seven management themes, we needed to develop these, in quotations, monitoring needs profiles. And this was informed by the workshop that we had, the participants who identified key drivers, and the review of the key background documents around those drivers. And so each of these management themes has a unique profile, though certainly acknowledge that there are linkages across those. So some of the species needs, for example, are going to be related to water quality, and water supply is going to be related to water quality. So we didn't do the kind of repeating all parameters for all themes, but tried to keep some of the distinct lanes, recognizing that there are linkages there. And so I'll just walk through quickly one of them. And so here's some of the management drivers that we had identified, acknowledged, that are relevant to flood management. And from a review of those, identified this set of monitoring parameters from our organizational framework. And using that as a starting point, then interrogated the database to basically look at it from a variety of dimensions. And so on the left here is basically the list of those parameters, and they're binned into these broad categories, so the socioeconomic, environmental drivers, and habitat-related ones. And then we have three, for each of those parameters, we have kind of three ways of looking at the coverage within the monitoring enterprise. So the first column is basically looking at a count of the activities across different regions, and so the colors represent different regions. The sampling frequency, we know, are the data collected annually, monthly, instantaneously. So we're able to kind of look at what these stacked bar charts at what type of frequency the data are being collected. And then on the far right, the years sampled, these are basically box plots looking at the ranges of the total number of years in the data record for those parameters. And so if you're far to the left, it's very few years. If you're far to the right, that's closer to 60 years in the record. And then creating a box plot with the median 75th percentile and the whiskers there. And so this is a snapshot for a management theme, and you can see, so basically the first two columns, the bars that have that are the furthest to the right, tell you the ones where there's the most coverage. So out of this list, the storage, and then these habitat, different flooded habitats, floodplain habitats, have quite a few monitoring activities represented. And so we've created these panels for all of those management themes, as I said. This is something presented in report number two. This is moving on now to looking at the question of coordination. And so this is basically looking at coordination or collaboration around monitoring across the whole monitoring enterprise. And so every little point around the outer side of this circle represents an organization that's monitoring in the Delta. And some of these, and the ties between those organizations represents when they're working together on an activity. So if two entities work together on an activity, there will be a line drawn between them. And so the pie charts and some of the names, which I know you can't see the best, but they basically represent those agencies, organizations that have the most influence or the most activity within the monitoring enterprise, given all that's in the inventory. So interesting at one level, and you can see like there's some interesting results through which are the top nine, for example, and there's strong, thick black lines, say, between DWR and the Bureau, which, you know, seems intuitive, makes sense, and some of the other connections also make sense. But it's pretty hard to tease out kind of broad patterns beyond that. And so in this work, what we did was we basically broke that down into these. We stratified the data according to monitoring activities and the monitoring themes. So, for example, we looked at all the water quality monitoring, and then we looked at the network of organizations involved in water quality monitoring, or terrestrial habitat monitoring, or bird monitoring, and so on. And we were able to do these network analysis at these finer, more what we would intuit that they're going to be working together on these common themes and these common needs. And so there's 20 of these network diagrams and all of the metrics related to them, and you get metrics that tell you how strongly coordinated the network is. It also tells you every individual node or organization within that network, how well connected and influential they are in that network. But I pulled together this four-panel slide basically to say, when we look across all of those 20, the types of networks that emerge, there's four types of networks that emerge. And so these are representations of each of those four. And so type one here, and the example I'm showing is water quality. Call this a large, highly centralized network. Type two is more of a moderate size, so slightly less, fewer entities, fewer ties, but it still has, as you can see there, for the type two, in the bottom left there, there's a cluster of organizations with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife, USGS, but there's a cluster of organizations there that are working together, and there's a bunch of dots and smaller connections around that, basically meaning others operating in this, doing monitoring related to terrestrial habitats, but not related or linked or connected to the other network, where there is a lot more activity and collaboration and coordination going on. The third type here is basically a small, slightly centralized as well. So there's a large, medium, and small here through the type 1, 2, and 3. Similar general structure. There's that small cluster and then a bunch of smaller groups or individuals working independently of that. And then the type 4 is largely a dispersed, fragmented network. And so this is useful, I think, because if somebody's trying to say, let's support these networks to do a better job, the types of interventions or the things you would want to do would be different for these different types of networks. And you also need to think about what they're doing as well. So, for example, for the type 4, you could say on one hand, well, it's a very fragmented network. Maybe we want this network to be working together better. However, if you look at the data that are there, they're agencies or organizations that have very distinct, not overlapping mandates. And so you wouldn't necessarily want them to be. So if it's, you know, transportation highways or if it's boating and waterways, there isn't necessarily a need to have them collaborating or coordinating. So there is the interpretation of these is also in the context of, well, what are the needs of these networks and how can we help them do a better job of collaborating? But I think in terms of these four types, it I think helps tailor the needs to the networks and the monitoring that's occurring. One other thing I just wanted to say here too, and this is through the network literature, this is something that is noticeable in other places too, but you'll see in the water quality network here, there's this core periphery. Basically, so you have a cluster of organizations working together, lots of activity, connections between these entities, but within that hub of activity, there's a core periphery. There's a core group that are really involved in the majority, have the most influence. And so in this example, I've listed those core periphery of organizations. And that core periphery will change, that changes depending on which network of monitoring we look at. Yeah.
Question having to do with how do you determine working together? Is it they're monitoring the same variables, or is there some more direct measure that they're actually collaborating with one another?
So, good question. So, in the work that we did, the metadata research, we basically looked at who's leading the implementation of monitoring, who's funding it, and who's supporting it in some way. And so we had a few roles that were defined in terms of their involvement. That was publicly available information. So we didn't do interviews and we didn't do kind of like a detailed analysis of kind of understanding the strength of those linkages and how well is the collaboration working or not. But just based on publicly available information, we can know those key attributes. And so when entities are funding activities together or they're working together, the inference is that there's some collaboration that's happening there. So, but it's a good point, you know, there's the quality of the collaboration is also something that's not represented through these diagrams.
I have one, just semantics question. What is the core periphery? That sounds like contradictory terms.
I thought this group would love jargon. No, it's some terminology that's in the network analysis literature. It basically just defines it's defined as this type of a network where you have a cluster of organizations, and I can't remember how many are in that one. Maybe it's like 30. There are a cluster of 30 organizations there that are doing water quality monitoring, working together. But within that group of 30, there's 9 that are really connected to most of the work that's going on. They're the most influential within that network.
So that makes up the core. Sorry.
I just have one follow-up from John's question. So if there's a dot on there representing an agency, does that mean that they're collecting samples, or could it mean that they are just a funder? Or so you could have, let's say, take an extreme water quality monitoring, only one agency collecting everything and everyone else just throwing in money? Or
So this analysis combined those roles. We didn't differentiate in this analysis. You could just think it like there's a bit of a balance in terms of sample size. So if we just looked at the funders, it would look different. The network would look different than this. Or if we just looked at who were the leads. But this looks at all of those roles in terms of kind of how they're involved. It doesn't differentiate across those different roles.
So if you have two dots with a line between them, it could just mean the funder and the the doer.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And one other thing, it doesn't show up really well in this diagram, but there is some variation in the thickness of the lines in some places, and basically that's telling you the strength of that connection between those two entities. It's a bit hard to see, like I said. But you can, and I think it's obvious already, but you can imagine there's a name, beside every dot, there's a name. There's a name of an organization there. And every line between them here, as I've noted, it's a tie between those organizations working on a common monitoring activity. So moving on, another thing that we looked at was were there opportunities to explore other efficiencies? And so using the database, we basically, for each of the monitoring categories, so the socioeconomic, environmental drivers, the habitats and species, we went through and did a top 5 ranking in terms of what are the parameters that have the most attention or most focus. And so here's an example of some of the for the environmental drivers. They were all water quality parameters. And so this category does include things like weather and climate, hydrology, things like that. But these 5 water quality parameters were tagged or identified as having the most attention within the monitoring enterprise, within this category. And so we know the parameters, we have the list of activities that are collecting those parameters, and so we could then go through and qualitatively review, okay, what are all of these different activities doing? Are there opportunities to improve some of the efficiencies here? And so these are just a few key points here that emerged from that review of those activities. And I underscore potential because there's a lot of nuance and context that's important for every activity. So these don't always hold true everywhere. But one possibility to improve the comparability of the water quality data sets was that there could be value in more standardized technologies, recognizing, though, that there's various reasons for technology selections. But there's also an implied need for certain calibration standards and maintenance of that equipment. Another thing which is interesting, like if you look at the list of those activities across those things, many of those, it's all the same activities. And so these 5 tend to be collected in common together. So when people are going out there, they tend to be collecting these 5 things together. So and that's true. So, for example, like a lot of these share those numbers beside the parameters. Those are the number of activities collecting those data. And so a lot of those activities will be in common. Also potential for improving the standardization of sampling protocols, you know, the depths, for example, of where these measurements are being taken, again, helping for some of that comparability, and recognizing that there's so much of this information that's being collected, and I know this has been said before, but also value in trying to increase the standard or centralization of data management and reporting. around these parameters. Like if you were going to target some of the water quality parameters, these could be the ones to help improve that centralization. Moving on to another review question here. And so this is a dendrogram, which I've described to others, is basically like a Plinko board where you could take a monitoring activity and you assign it to one of the branches of the tree. And the branches of the tree are defined by these five attributes of data quality. And we did do a data quality assessment review, just what are the features of data quality that people generally tend to look at and tended to be, are data open source, publicly accessible? Are there monitoring designs? Are they QA/QC'd? What's the time lag between data collection and data reporting? And are there precision estimates available around the data? And so this tree basically lays out those five attributes and the kind of varying categorizations of the monitoring activities according to those. So is it publicly accessible? Yes or no, or unknown. And so the first branch in the tree here basically does that. Is it publicly accessible? And 133 of the 139 in this example are publicly accessible. And then going to the right, there's a few that are unknown and one that's not. I won't kind of go through all of the branches of the tree, but the one key message to take away here, if you take the branches to the left, you'll see that the 88 of 139 here, 63%, are publicly accessible and are guided by some form of monitoring design or sampling protocol. You go to the next branch there, 51% are also in combination with being publicly accessible and having some guided by a monitoring design. They also have QA/QC procedures. And so overall, you can kind of bin all of the activities into one of these terminal nodes, the endpoints in the tree here, and say overall it's a positive story in terms of generally strong data quality, given the wide variety of types of information in the inventory. I'd say that's a positive message. We also looked at the monitoring activities in terms of data accessibility, and the attributes for that were, again, public accessibility, machine readability, and timeliness here. And again, another positive message. This is a Sankey diagram. I wouldn't get too caught up on the kind of flows between the three stacked bars, but just focus on the stacked bars, the three stacked bars, to basically say, well, here's the total number of activities and what's the spread across the different ratings for those attributes. And so the first stacked bar, for example, 133 of 139, 96% have publicly accessible information. The machine readable, 88 of 139, 63% are machine readable, and 51% have less than a year time lag associated with those. So again, generally, I'd say a positive message or kind of insight in terms of the accessibility of the data. Next question here was around resources. And one of the messages from that, and I did this contingency table here to look at how many of the activities were we able to pull out information around startup costs and annual costs. And so very few had both startup and annual costs. More had annual costs, 35 activities, but not startup costs. So startup was certainly difficult to find. But a lot of gaps in terms of the cost information and just converting those to percentages just to give you a sense. So 71% with no cost information. And given the cost information we were able to pull together, there were some challenges even with those data that I'll say varied quality. So some monitoring activities like those associated with the IEP tend to have very good public information, work plans, budgets, things like that, can pull that out. But in many other cases, with some follow-up, we can get personal communication, kind of ballpark guesses about what costs are, annual costs are, but not kind of highly public or referenced information around those things.
Mark, can you put an x-axis on the annual cost?
There's as I mentioned last night, so there was a glitch in terms of some of the analysis we were doing in terms of some double counting. So I'd say the relative values here are reflective of the true data, but the absolute values are not. And so that's why I didn't have the axis here, but I put the boxes around the millions, hundreds of thousands, and ten thousands. So we'll fix. Yeah, we can fix that. It's just a glitch that we didn't catch soon enough for the draft report. But it's easy to fix. I just needed to do it and didn't have it done in time for this. So basically, this is these stacked bars for each monitoring activity into these cost categories. Yeah, go ahead, Tom. Yeah.
I had a question about the cost.
Yeah.
Did you look at all at the distribution of the cost? Like, is it concentrated in just a few agencies, or is it distributed fairly uniformly?
So this is part of the challenges with the comparability of the cost. Sometimes the activity, it's not clear how much every agency is funding an activity. So there's multiple funders. We don't have a detailed breakdown. We also don't know what's bundled in that estimate of cost. And so my notes here about comparability, many activities. So we don't know how much of that, is that just field data collection? Is that also kind of some of the data management costs associated with it? There's variation in terms of the number of sites that are being covered in terms of those costs. Some sites that will be within the Delta, some sites outside of the Delta. And many parameters. And so we can't know, like, okay, how much for collecting your water temperature or your other kind of water quality versus your species data versus your habitat. So we can't really break things down very well by agency, activities, parameters, whatnot. We really just have a straight line item cost for an activity. It's the best we could do.
So it would be very difficult to even use the sample you have to guide you to sort of anticipate what you could focus on to see what costs are.
Sorry, I'm not clear on your question there. Can you rephrase that?
It seems to me it's a really fundamental question what the total cost of this monitoring is.
Yeah.
And if you can't answer it exactly by sampling what you got, you might be able to focus on a few things and improve the information there. And it sounds like you probably won't even be able to get a meaningful information out of the sample.
I'd say at the broad level that we have it, I'd say we can't do a very good job of trying to disentangle those costs much more. I agree with you. It's an important one. To me, it highlights something where there maybe should be higher reporting of some of those costs, clarity around what those costs are. It seems like it's an easy information for people to be reporting or keeping track of, being mindful of. It's just not kind of widely available.
Tom, we had the same problem with the IEP review that Steve had asked for a breakdown of budgets, and information just isn't available.
Yeah. Well, having worked for a federal agency, I know how difficult it is when you get those requests. What does it cost? Because you have research scientists doing a whole bunch of stuff, and they're sort of guessing how much time they're spending on, say, sampling or whatever. So I can understand the problem, but I was hoping maybe it'd be possible to at least sample your way out of it or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was going to add, as part of the science funding and governance initiative that you guys have all been a part of, one of the recommendations coming out of that was to improve cost estimates of current science funding. And so both the state and federal agencies are working to put together a template of that, a cross-cut budget sort of idea that will not for past costs or past expenses, but going forward, hopefully we'll improve that. And for this last year, there's pretty crude estimates, but I think for the coming next year, I think we'll have much better estimates. And I think your report will be very useful as a way for them to, to help put together all those estimates.
Yep.
Yeah, this is sort of a related question. I was going to wait till the end, but it's did you get it all in the inventory? I mean, how do you know if you got all of monitoring programs or do you have an estimate of the percentage of monitoring programs that are in your inventory?
a lot of work went into just figuring out what goes in the inventory as well as getting the information in the inventory. So in a way, it was a bit of like fruitless work because they're kind of like going through things. And like if people would direct us to, say, some derived data source, well, the derived data aren't appropriate, but we need to go to the source, try to track down the source of those data, right? And then if you look at some of the large data portals, again, they're serving data from others, and sometimes they're derived or modeled. And so there was a lot of the disentangling of kind of things that are out there to try to go back to the sources of where the data are collecting. It's hard for me to say, like, what. So how much does the inventory, that 140, represent all monitoring? We scoured quite a bit, and we got a lot of input and a lot of leads that we followed. I'm sure it's not going to include everything. There's also, I think, some things that we've included in there which are a bit of, like, they're a bit bundled monitoring. So if there's, like, I think, like, the passage assessment database was an example where, you know, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of records that are in there, which are all kind of individually being collected by somebody and doing their work, but it's a centralized place where they're reporting that information. We didn't compile the thousands of individual, like, data collections of that all fed into that, but we kind of pointed to that passage database because it's a really important source of information. It represents an important parameter within the system. So I can't answer your question, like, precisely. You know, we did a pretty good job, and, you know, I think and happy to. It's a tool that can be living if people want to add things, refine the content, add to the content. You know, I'd certainly welcome that and see this as an evolution of knowledge and synthesis, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to approach it, because then if people say it's not here, you know, then you can be added to it. A corollary question, and I know we talked about this before. How did you handle sort of national programs that also cover the Delta, like, yeah. I'm thinking of satellite imagery or weather stations, things like
that. So some of those, I don't know if all, we did look at some of those national data sets, and so some of them should be, they're in there. So like, I believe the weather ones, so we covered that. We did have one of the kind of tags of information we looked at. It's like, well, what's the size of this data set nationally? So how many sites? And then state, I think we had, and then also for the Delta. So we did try to, like, zoom in and say, well, how many of those locations, given it's a national data set, are reflective of the Delta? So, you know, USGS has some of those, National Weather Service has some of those, for example. So those are included.
All these things are manually, you know, sorted out, or you had a crawler going in?
No, that was manual.
All manual.
That was manual. No, I don't think.
What percentage of data was easy to get, or some things you couldn't get? Can you make a comment on that?
Sorry,
the data. Some of them are not available, or yeah, they don't want to give some of the data. So can you make a comment on that? What type of data you couldn't get?
Well, I'd say the starting point was the publicly accessible stuff, so what we could find publicly available through searches, and where it was possible to find data, follow-up data contacts. We kept track of those, and then we basically went through and prioritized, once we had pulled together a lot of information, and said, okay, where do we have the biggest gaps? We couldn't find that through the public sources. And then we went through and basically followed up with some of the data contacts that we had. So it was a mix. I'd say there is no clear answer. There's no single activity that was easy. There was always, like, some effort to do that. I mean, that's part of the, never mind just setting up the structure and of all the those pieces I talked about earlier, but then finding the activities and then following through on the information. So it's a breadth versus this project was definitely a breadth versus depth challenge, right? There's just such a breadth of coverage of issues and needs. So, you know, how deep we could go with an activity was challenging, you know, given the resources we had, but we've got some coverage for all of those things. And I think, as Steve was pointing out, and I would highlight, there's great value. There's still a ton of great value through some of the analysis and insights we're pulling out. And it serves as a template for building on that knowledge going forward. So if there's improvements to make to the content that's there, great. If you have more things to add, you have a structure in place, you can add that information. Yep.
Two things. Well, so one, yeah. I think they did do lots of outreach because I know one of Tom's staff was working on trying to find information about nutria monitoring and was doing lots of work to try to track down that. So I think they did lots of follow-up and work in that. And then I think in terms of sort of the living quality of the data, George Isaac is here and he's been promoting and really helping to lead the effort for a science tracker that will be not just monitoring, but and not an inventory of data, but an inventory of science activities within the Delta, and will be a living database. And I think the hope is that the work that's been, all the information that's been collected for this monitoring inventory will be the basis, the initial basis of the science tracker that we will then add to, and that will be a growing or a living database that will, you know, if people see that things aren't included, there'll be opportunities for them to add. And we hope to incorporate the cost issues into the science tracker as well as that data improves.
Yeah, I think George is here. So we are going to have some demonstrations of the inventory tool. And George, maybe if you would come up and give some comments during the public comment period.
This is really neat. Might not seem neat to you, if you're drowning in it for a while. But what I find really interesting about this is that you're essentially monitoring. And maybe that should be the title for our report rather than the cumbersome modeling enterprise review. And I think as we do this monitoring, it would behoove us all to demonstrate some of the practices that we would like to see in other monitoring. You know, sort of have a recursive review in this sense. So in the development of your monitoring instruments, which you've invested in mightily here, and data management and transparency and, you know, efforts of inclusion, I think the degree that we can write this up to illustrate some of the major points we would like to see in overall monitoring programs in general and in the monitoring of monitoring might be a nice rhetorical device and a way of making sure that we have clear messages in the whole document and a whole enterprise. But the idea of monitoring, we can see how difficult it is to monitor anything, and it's illustrated, I think, by this enterprise here.
For component two, John prepared a kind of a philosophical approach to doing exactly that last June.
And I'll get to a few slides, but that's interesting segue to some of my next points here as well. I won't get into this, but there's also information on, just in the interest of time, there's also information about this coverage of sites from one to hundreds, basically. So moving on to, and this is coming close to wrapping up here, allowing more time for discussion. But so just to recap or remind folks, we also did go in our first report, we did a review of five case studies, complex monitoring and adaptive management programs elsewhere. From that, I'd say there were some attributes of success that we noted from those case studies. Also, given some of S's experience in reviews of adaptive management programs, I'd say there's also some key factors that we've identified of some of those programs and what makes them successful. And so kind of pulling on a lot of those things, I'd say there's in the report, there's discussion around three core enabling factors of success. First one here is around the strengthening leadership and trust to support adaptive management monitoring. I don't need, everyone here knows that it's a complex landscape of agencies, drivers, decision authorities in the Delta. And to really work through that that complexity, you need coordination and integration. And that coordination and integration requires leadership. And that's true when you look program after program, those that are more successful have clear leadership and direction. And resolving in complex systems with high uncertainties, these wicked problems, there's massive uncertainties. You need to find innovations. You need to resolve those uncertainties. You need to try things you haven't tried before. All of that requires trust. And that's hard, say, for example, when you're working in an environment where there's fear of legal challenges, because if you try something that fails, you're going to get taken to court over it. So I don't know how much of this is feels like news to folks, but it's certainly in our experience, in my experience, these are important, and a lot of things fall out of. So this does, you may wonder, how does this relate to monitoring? But in my observation, looking in other places, I don't know the Delta as well as you folks in the room, but when the value that I bring is I have experience kind of in a lot of different places, and so the things that I see in other places, this is a really important one. And so I mentioned that the Section 4 is kind of yet under development and wanting some further discussion, but I'd say there's a bit of a point here in terms of the recommendations or where does the report go. And I'd say the way I'd been thinking about it, at least, is around, I think, trying to get away at the end of this report from talking about incremental changes, but trying to move a bit more towards some of these so-called big moves. And so I think a big move is, and I know there's a lot of work, say, through CAMPT and the IEP, and there is a lot of good governance and good coordination and collaboration. Still think there needs to be further strengthening around that governance to support adaptive management in a very intentional way. And so, I don't think we can get into our report of trying to prescribe what that governance looks like. My experience elsewhere, you start small with a core team. You don't try to bring everybody together at the beginning, but you start with a small core team, and you build from that strength. You get the core team to kind of focus on what the leadership needs to be, and then you bring others into that common vision. So those are some insights and experience that I have. But I think, you know, this is a fundamental one. If monitoring is going to be addressing the needs, adaptive management is going to be addressing the needs, it needs to start from the kind of leadership and the governance that kind of just prescribes or dictates the demands. The second enabling factor here, clarifying the problems that AM and related monitoring are in intended to address. And again, it's this complexity thing. It's where we started with trying to grapple with all this complexity. Just understanding, okay, it's easy to say we want the physical, chemical, biological, socioeconomic monitoring. Okay, but well, what does that mean? And so it was a non-trivial effort for us to be very precise about that. It's easy to make the kind of broad statements, but when you're doing this work, we need to be very precise. Science needs to be precise. And so clarifying the problems, the issues, the parameters, and getting agreement, trying to get agreement around those things. Especially the role of socioeconomic monitoring, given some of the diversity of views. People see it as being really important, but I'd say there's still some variation of views. I did see that there was a report. I hadn't looked at it, but I saw a report outside in terms of on the socioeconomic monitoring or needs. So I took a copy, so I'll look into kind of what some of the current thinking is around that. But And I'd say another related point to this is this idea about uncertainties. And I see this in many places that anytime somebody identifies an uncertainty, they think, oh, well, let's use AM to resolve it. And in my experience, AM doesn't address and resolve all uncertainties. It's never intended to do that. It is intended to focus on management uncertainties, and that can be in quotes, which is the uncertainties that hinder decision makers from knowing what actions to take. And that's different than a science uncertainty. And so if a scientist might have some unknown that they're trying to, a parameter they're trying to estimate for some model or something, for example, that's different than a management uncertainty. And you could use a different learning strategy to resolve that. AM is about, it's a learning strategy. How do we use our actions to learn about the effectiveness of them and then improve those actions over time? There are other learning strategies, whether it's just doing a desktop lit review, it's doing a modeling exercise or a conflict negotiation or resolution process to help bring the agencies together. Those are different tools, and that's not AM. Necessarily. In our review kind of work so far, it feels like there's a bit of muddling of some of that not clear on what the uncertainties that need to be resolved and where AM should be a learning strategy to help resolve those. And so I think, again, this points to another big move. And again, I know there's work that's happening in this space, and so it isn't trying to dismiss the work that's happening, but definitely encourage more synthesis. Our work, we by the necessity of our work, we had to do a lot of synthesis. But doing that synthesis, focusing and standardizing some of the science and management needs, I think there's a lot of work that we've done which can be leveraged. It can be improved upon. It's not going to be perfect. But, you know, I think there's a big move there as well. And then lastly, improving the practice of AM and design of related monitoring. And so given the complexities, again, need to look across broader spatial scales, integrate monitoring across the full delta, not just at single sites. For example, looking, another thing working on in Louisiana coast, basically looking at like time varying objectives. So objectives aren't just locked in time, but they're actually varying as the system changes. We're trying to like have different targets or different things we're trying to achieve, and they're incremental things over time. They may be consistent with an overall direction, but you're allowing for some of that time varying flexibility. And then another key thing that came out was there's quite a limitation in terms of effectiveness monitoring. And if we're going to do AM, you really need to be implementing your actions with coupled with a monitoring system that's going to help you understand the effect of those actions. I'm not sure if everybody monitoring in the Delta like truly understands that kind of definition of effectiveness monitoring, but part of this could be experimental designs and power analyses. And so when you're coupling your monitoring with those designs and how you're implementing your actions, paired treatments, for example, and you're doing comparisons of your data to see which action is working better, if it's a restoration action, for example, that there's certainly limits in terms of what we saw around effectiveness monitoring and value in doing more of that. And so, again, I think a third big move here is for priority monitoring needs, which the inventory work that we've done can help identify what those priorities are. It's not my place or our place to kind of say, here are the priorities, because it's not our needs that are being addressed. But for those priority monitoring needs, I think reimagining the monitoring designs. And so rather than going through like an incremental activity by activity, well, let's compare all of these activities and are people sampling in similar places and maybe they're bumping up against each other and they can go through and try to better coordinate or collaborate. I think to me, for a few things, for a few parameters, start from scratch. Look at if we were trying to do water quality monitoring and using, you know, using rigorous statistical design principles, for example. So, you know, stratified random panel designs, rotating panel designs. There's a lot of like good work you can do. You can start from scratch for your priority needs. And then when you have like a good design, everybody can chip in to fill in their part where they want to. Rather than kind of incrementally trying to shoehorn in a lot of different activities that are going to be set up, because I have had to do this in Fraser River example most recently, where we're basically looking at a whole bunch of activities, we're trying to get them to work together better, and they're just like, it just becomes an entrenched way. People just get entrenched and it's like, well, no, I'm doing it this way, and I need to do it this way, and I can't try to work with these other folks. So anyway, that's the third big move. I think, Vince, did you have a question? Oh, sorry. So I'm going to quickly move on here just to, I won't do a full demo, but there are a few features in the inventory tool that are now built. And this is going to be a bit hard to see, I realize here, but basically there's two, out of the review questions, there'll be three. There are currently two tool features that are live now. One is basically it's that Plinko board looking at data accessibility, and so you can click on these nodes. It gives you count. You can filter the monitoring activities, the monitoring categories you're interested in. Yeah, you can expand or contract these different nodes, and you can click on them, and you can find what are the activities related to those. So you can say for those that have monitoring guidance and are machine readable and have short reporting lags, go to those activities, and so you can query, interrogate the database using this Plinko board, expanding, contracting based on what you're interested in exploring in the inventory. And then another one here is this heat map. Basically, across the top, the column headings here are different regions of the Delta, and you can define your year range, and it basically gives you a heat map of the coverage of monitoring activities. Again, you can specify your parameters of interest, but it'll tell you for those parameters, and you can bundle or disaggregate those parameters, but given your search terms, what's the coverage from low being a light color to dark blue, that tells you if there's a much more intense coverage or more activities that are focused in those places on those years. So those are the two features that are now in the tool. And then I will conclude with that slide just to say we're still on track and moving to finalize all of our work by the end of March. You'll have final reports at your next ISB meeting in March. Or not, maybe not your next, but the meeting in March. Anyway, that's it for me. Maybe just a few minutes to spare if there's... Yeah, but I'm happy to stay as long as you need.
Mark, yeah. Last night, the working group or the writing group had a chance to talk with Mark in more detail about the various aspects, but we wanted to make sure there's plenty of time for questions. So anybody have something they'd like to ask? Well, this is important.
This is Joy. I have a question.
Yeah, Joy, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Very nice overview. I really like the graphics. On your slide 19, well, first let me ask, this survey of the monitoring is whether there is or isn't monitoring of a particular attribute rather than how much monitoring takes place for a particular attribute, like temperature must be frequently measured and birds would be maybe once or twice a year. Is that, but the data have been analyzed as the networks and everything are based on yes or no data?
I'd say we go a bit further than just yes or no, that we the panels that I showed at the beginning basically tell you some of the coverage, so the strength of the coverage, basically how many activities are focused on or include monitoring around this parameter. So it will tell you those that are where their data or a lot of activities. So I think you say temperature. Yeah, temperature was one of those that is the most commonly sampled, collected, amongst a few other water quality parameters. Those are definitely at the top of the list, given all of the activities that are in the inventory. So it's a bit more than just a yes or no. Sorry, what was that?
To tease out potential efficiencies if some things are being monitored too often for the need, or vice versa, that more data are needed.
Sorry, I missed the question there.
Okay. You could, from your data, tease apart whether or not data might be gathered too often or not often enough.
Yeah, I think... So I say that we definitely caveat the redundancies, gaps piece of our work and say potential, because every activity is occurring for a certain purpose. And so mm-hmm. we know that folks are targeting their data collection to serve those needs. I think the question comes to, well, are there efficiencies here where maybe two activities are collecting things in the same place or time when they don't need to be? There's mm-hmm. a certain level of detailed exploration that's required to really dig into that, and that's just a depth we didn't have to get into to kind of look across all 140. There's a complex like 140 by 130, 129 parameters, right, and every possible combination. So there's just a lot of possible interactions there. So I think at a broad level, I believe very strongly in that there's massive value and insights that we're pulling out from the activities and the inventory as it is now. So we can help prioritize some of those places to look, but I'd say we can't, at the inventory level, can't get into the detailed work of really site-by-site comparisons and timing of sampling to kind of get at some of those issues.
Well, I was looking at your slide number 19, where you clarify the problems that adaptive management are supposed to address, and you do talk about the different things being monitored, but the level of monitoring should not only be sufficient for research and science, but also for the decision makers, and many times we're probably gathering far more data than a decision maker even can understand. So I think it would help to add some thoughts from yesterday's discussion about the need on the part of the decision makers to understand the system.
That certainly aligns with some of our own insights and perspectives, definitely.
Great. Thank you.
Yep.
This is sort of a follow-up to Joy's question. Do you have information in the database on the purpose of the monitoring? I mean, you've classified it by, you know, like habitat or things like that. But
yeah, we do have.
Why
do,
the agency is doing it.
We do have statements in there. Sometimes that's very clear. Sometimes it's a bit more ambiguous. But where we could find those statements of a purpose of monitoring, those are in there, yeah.
Joe?
The quality control information is in the metadata for each of the data set. The quality control, that information is included in the metadata of all the...
Yeah, where we could find notes, and that's part of that that dendrogram, was basically us coding, like, is data QAQC happening, yes or no, or partially, or unknown. And so where we saw QAQC procedures, it was noted, we kind of made reference to those things, tried to... capture some of those notes. Yeah.
We have about 10 minutes for more questions. Dick, do you have any questions, comments?
No, I'm satisfied, interested, but no more questions.
Jay?
These are really interesting network diagrams you have in lots of different ways. Is it maybe having some worthwhile to have some more interpretation of the clusters in those? I mean, I wonder if IEP shows up as a cluster.
Yeah.
It ought to, right? I mean, but the subclusters, I think, might also be interesting. And maybe that's just if the data is made available, people can find that out for themselves. But and then it might be interesting, I was thinking, to you had the wonderful big circle diagram with all the trajectories across. I'm wondering if it would be worthwhile to segment that into all the state agencies, all the federal agencies that do this, universities, local agencies, and other, and then see if that changes the pattern, if you see a pattern between, is there a pattern of federal-state cooperation, or is it all between different state operations? You can see this, the kind of analyses you could get out of that. And then it might be interesting to sort of do a simplification of this diagram that just has maybe those five clusters, federal, state, local, university, other, just to see at that level of aggregation, do you see much collaboration across those different types of entities?
Well, I intuitively, just looking at the data, I know you would. You would definitely see differences there. The federal state agencies are going to be leading and the core influencers within most of those networks.
Right.
So certainly some of the biggest networks. But, those things are – it's possible to do those things. Yeah.
So part of what I think might be interesting to look at, one of hundreds of things maybe, is to what degree do the different levels of government cooperate – relative to the different governments within a level of government, if that makes sense. Or maybe it's the different missions of the different state agencies that make them diverge, and the state agencies tend to pair with an analogous federal agency in terms of their missions. It would be kind of interesting.
Well, we tried in the earlier drafts to, when you looked at more agencies, and it was just, you know, like almost... Yeah. Spaghetti on a plate, you know. But the going the other direction, I think, is really a good idea.
Yeah, and so that's where I think you make some good points in terms of like just trying to stratify this from the lens of what are the types of organizations, just looking at it from a state, federal, NGO, university, private, that kind of perspective. And so I think there's likely some things there. And you could, if say, generate this side by side to just look at those comparisons.
Not to make a lot of work for you.
As you say, like there, you know, thousands of ways to look at it. And so, right. What's the question that you're asking? To me, and this does relate to a next step. And I think that there would be value in trying to, whether it's sitting down with an agency or a group of agencies, using this inventory to ask some of those questions around kind of who are you interested in coordinating with, or what are the parameters that you're interested in, or how do you want to understand your connections to these different entities? Mm-hmm. Because there are, like you say, there's thousands of ways of framing different questions, mm-hmm. and so, you know, at a broad level, we did it in a few ways here, which we thought made sense. But there's a lot of different insights that I'm sure that others will have opinions of more than just me. And I think there's the richness of information there. Not going to answer all those questions in this report, but the data are there, and the information is there, and the structure is there to do it.
This is wonderful. This is very thought provoking and hopefully analysis provoking. Not necessarily just for you, but for other folks.
Yeah, yeah. No,
I think have fun with this.
A lot of it's for us. I mean, in the next phase, the question is, what questions do we want to ask, and do we work with some of the science program staff to run some of these analyses along the lines of what you're asking? That's where, these folks are done at the end of March. And I'm sure they're already over budget, but I didn't ask that, but I'm sure they are. And so the question is, what do we want to do in next steps? Right. And hopefully we can, if George is available to work on some of these things, we can hopefully at least give you a phone call and say, did we do this right or not? You know, because that's one of the things that we have to...
We clarified that yesterday. Yes, he is open to phone calls.
Okay. Or maybe just
more
email.
More precise with what a phone call means.
Short phone calls. One other small suggestion on the network diagrams, you might explore changing the colors of the dots, depending upon whether they're in one of those, say, 5 seconds.
I made a note about that, and that was an easy way. I was thinking of trying to reflect that, if we can basically color code these. Yeah.
It'd be very cool.
And Jay, there's so many more types of analysis that we've gone over, and we looked at histograms.
I used to data dredge when I was a social geographer.
Steve, you had?
Yeah, just to follow up on the sphere, I like Jay's ideas about looking at it. Because that sphere looks cool, but I don't know if it's good or bad. And so I guess one question is, have you done any comparisons like that in other systems that we could use to compare? Or secondly, is there a way to quantify it? You know, you certainly have numbers of lines and thicknesses of lines, so I would think you could put in, let's say, state agencies and get a certain value, or federal agencies, and sort of summarize the system as a whole.
So the metrics, the data part, and that's appendices E, F, and G, basically, provide a lot of the raw data. And so so for each of the networks, you basically get the scores. So how big are the networks? How connected are they? And it defines all the metrics in there. So the raw data and which type of one of these four types, it tells you which of the four types those networks are. We try to provide as much of those data in the appendices as possible, because I know people would want to look. So for example, water quality, it tells you here's the top 25 agencies, and it tells you their relative influence within those networks. So, but to your first point about, well, is it good or bad, we do say that in the report too, that just because you have a network diagram doesn't tell you is it good or bad. So there is a value judgment there about, okay, is this a good level of collaboration? I'd say and this is where I think there needs to be a bit of back and forth. I think there's useful diagnostics that these measures provide in terms of understanding how connected people, organizations are around these different themes. But there needs to be a dialogue to help understand kind of what are the coordination needs. This is kind of what we see based on the data of the collaboration. But what can we do to make it better? Working with the core periphery, for example, that helping them acknowledge their leadership role within those networks and helping them leverage the influence and the activities of others that they're working with. Standardize, so if there's some entities, say, on the outsides of that, is there value in trying to standardize their work with the work of folks within that core network? Maybe. I'm not sure that that's true, but that's you could try to to do that. And so that's why I say, like, it's there's a dialogue with this. These are diagnostic measures, and then I think you can use these to have those conversations. There is literature and research that's been done on these kinds of things. You can look at those kinds of things, but it's not a straight answer is the short story here. Yep.
Liz is getting the hook out on this. So, but Tom, do you have anything that you would like to add on the socioeconomic?
Well, I think Mark characterized it correctly in that the socioeconomic monitoring is kind of overlooked. And I think when we, you know, when we first started on this project, it's you know, the natural inclination is to think about population, employment, and housing, just like always. But really, the Delta has a lot of more subtle and significant challenges with land use changes over time, changes in agriculture, and just anecdotally, what's happening to a lot of the businesses and a lot of the recreation and tourism in the Delta is changing significantly, sometimes related to fisheries or, you know, changes in natural resources. So we found almost a complete lack of monitoring programs that are Delta specific. We can cookie cutter a data set, use the legal Delta GIS shapefile and try to cookie cutter the data set, but to actually find an entity or agency or organization that is monitoring socioeconomics in the Delta is pretty much non-existent.
Yeah. Dick, do you have any questions about that?
No, I think that's a clear observation. That's partly because of the multiple counties and just a bit of several counties and makes collecting social data very difficult.
Okay, thanks. And George, anything you want to add about the inventory tool?
Are you asking me?
Can you hear me? Okay. Some of the discussions here were about continuing this effort in adding more data to this existing value of work that's been done here. And we have been, from the inception of this program, have been closely monitoring the progress, monitoring, as Dave would say. But we are not, at this point, sure as to how we want to imbibe this into the science tracker. We do have the database, and instead of just taking it as a static tool, we want to make it a living tool within the science tracker. And that will depend on the architecture of the science tracker and the software stack that's used to build that. So, but we have been very closely looking at the different ways we can imbibe this into the science tracker, and we will be definitely doing that.
Thanks, George.
Thank you.
So just to, for all the board members, you're going to be getting a copy of the draft, the Interim Report 3, and we'd like to get comments to Edmund by February 21st. February 18th.
Oh, 3 days less.
Remember, the writing group is going to meet after our session this morning with Mark. So thank you, Mark and Tom, for coming. And I think you can see how valuable we think the work you're doing is in terms of our report and working in the Delta. So thanks very much, and we'll see you later.
Great. Thanks. Thanks for the time today.
Sorry, I was late.
Yeah, but thank you both. And thank you, Vince, for, we're only over by a couple of minutes. We largely have stayed on time. No, I just wanted to give you a heads up. Right. So we're going to shift away from monitoring to talking about the draft Delta Plan ecosystem amendment. The Delta, I'll give a little bit of background. The Delta ISB is in the process of reviewing the preliminary draft of the Delta Plan Ecosystem Amendment. And based on our discussion at past meetings, a draft memo was prepared summarizing the Delta ISB comments. And then since our last public meeting on January 10th, we were able to review the 6 independent science expert reviews as well. So in response to both our past discussions as well as the external review. We have prepared a new draft memo for discussion. And here at the table, we have Jeff Henderson and Martina Kohler, who are here to answer questions and, maybe respond to our draft memo. So I'll start by just inviting the board to comment on the draft. So basically, we asked members of the ISB to provide feedback to us, and then Tracy and Dick and I worked on putting together the draft. So I guess the first question would be to see how the board feels about the current draft and whether you feel your individual perspectives have been represented in the body of this new draft. So I guess just as an overview, we spent a little bit of time working through process, and then we also highlighted a couple of points that we felt had not been addressed as well as we had hoped that it would be, but we also understand that there are other considerations that prevented some of our comments from being incorporated. And then we also, we were really happy with the external review process. I think the quality and depth of those reviews was very, you should be commended for seeking out those reviews, and we appreciated the comments. And then we just added a bit of information about things that we would like to kind of keep on the horizon. So, and that fell into three broad categories: adaptive management in the face of accelerating change, issues related to statistical power and precision, and then maybe revisiting the or recognizing more broadly Native American practices. So at this point, I'll just open the floor to the board for their feedback on the memo. Yeah, so you can see, and also, I guess, just so that you see, we did include the individual comments as feedback. So I don't know, is there anything that is not adequately represented in the memo, or that people would like to add to the memo? Everybody's shuffling around.
I appreciate the inclusion of the TEK issues.
Great. Yeah, thank you, Joy, for pointing those out.
I think it's especially important for the Delta because of the high density of Native Americans that were modifying the landscape long before white people arrived. So wherever we see suggestions that there are pristine ecosystems absent human influence, we should flag that, because probably Native Americans did have impacts, and we just don't know what they were or where.
Yeah, thank you, Joy. So I'm not seeing any responses from the board. I don't know, Jeff or Martina, do you want to comment on our draft memo?
Yeah, I would like to comment. First, I really thank you very much for the comments. I really appreciate your comments and the peer review comments. And then maybe on that front, I would like to thank the Delta Science Program and John as a lead scientist, because they facilitated the external review and selected the experts. So thank you very much for that. And we will be taking those comments and addressing them as we revise the performance measures and the associated data sheets. So I think I do have a question, I guess, and it relates. I attended your panel discussion yesterday, and so it kind of relates to your recommendation as far as how do we to establish a like the process for the interim short-term evaluations and kind of how to maintain the consistency of the performance measurements over time so it's useful and meaningful tool for the management, as a management tool and a communication tool. Maybe a comment. I would like to maybe step back a little bit and kind of remind everyone. So the performance measures are part of the overall adaptive management approach that the council is using. And so this includes the five-year cycle of the Delta Plan review, where it evaluates the status of implementation and status of coordination and cooperation among the partner agencies, as well as the assessments of the performance measures. So the five-year review last year, in 2019, included only the administrative performance measures, but the five-year in 2024 will include assessments of the output outcome measures. So this will in turn kind of like the results from the five-year review in turn inform the council and kind of their action or the recommendations and how they act, mm-hmm. you know, in the next cycle. So within this bigger adaptive management approach, I guess the question, or if you have any further comments on the process, how we, you know, have this evaluations of performance measures and kind of incorporation of any uncertainty between these management actions and how we are evaluated within each measure. That would be really helpful. And again, as far as like addressing some of the... So I guess in the data sheets we will have a section where we are kind of conceptually describing these major variables that influence the measure. But if you have any other ideas how we can build that protocol for assessment for the short-term evaluations, I think it would be, again, it would be kind of good if you can build on that or anything you can recommend, any additional tools or ideas, novel approaches or anything. It's because it's not easy. So, yeah, thank you. And again, thank you for all the comments.
John has his name up, so.
Seems to me there's a fundamental contradiction or conundrum in terms of the dynamics of the Delta and performance measures, in that you want performance measures to remain stable over time so that they can actually over time measure the response to management actions. On the other hand, as we've been dwelling on over the last day or longer, the system is changing very rapidly, which may mean that the performance measures that you put into place now no longer really measure what you want to be measuring about outcomes or about the state of the system in a short period of time if it's rapidly changing. So you have this contradiction between wanting stable performance measures to give you the long-term tracking and dynamic performance measures that chart the changes in the system and are responsive to changes in important parameters. Have you considered that, or how do you deal with that conundrum?
Well, again, I think the approach we will be like, you know, we are taking is describing in the supporting data sheets what are the issues, what are the driving variables or the driving, what are the uncertainties, what are the driving variables, what is the uncertainty in management, what is the driving, the external factors, kind of just outlining conceptually, setting it out, and then high-level process, or kind of like the process for like those five-year like annual assessments, but kind of that are specific on the measures, because each of the measures has a different time scale. But hopefully, like the five-year assessments or evaluations will will include assessment of those measures within the conceptual understanding of the potential dynamics and the rate of change. And I guess having some space for the interpretation. So I think you have the assessments of the measures, but then like, what does it mean? That I guess it's just like setting the process for that without being too specific. I don't know. I mean, it's we are working on it.
Yeah, I think it is a bit of a conundrum, and that's why we've been advocating to, I guess, first and foremost, to be forthright about the idea that you are working in a dynamic, changing system, and then to sort of maybe move away from absolutes and to think more in terms of trajectories, and also to think about uncertainties, because the trajectory or the slope might not, it might vary over time. Sometimes the response is not immediate. Responses might take longer to sort of become visible. And also, even if you have like a positive trajectory at the beginning, you might level off or things might change. So we're just advocating for, I guess, flexibility in your thinking about the performance measures. And also, I mean, we don't want you to have to change them every 5 years. So thinking about things that are going to, have continuity as you move forward. Tracy.
So I'm curious what your thoughts are on the sort of the almost a preamble to the major points of adaptive management, statistical power, and Native American practices, when we say that we still feel really strongly that some of the goals and targets that are being set are just not realistic, and that this does not represent best available science, but we're taking that off of your shoulders and saying we want to bring this forward some other way to the legislature, et cetera. What are your thoughts on that? Because I know that we've said this pretty repeatedly, and there has been some response and some pushback, but we still feel, and I think we're right, that some of the goals are just not achievable. So what are your thoughts on us saying that? Do you think it'll get lost in here? Should we, and any thoughts on ways to bring it forward? And again, it's outside of the Delta Stewardship Council staff, I think, but I'm just curious how you and others in the council are reacting to that, if at all.
Thanks for the question. I do think in many ways, one of these examples in here essentially describes that the statutory provisions that we're operating under establish certain goals and targets that we're then designing the Delta Plan, and in change with the Delta Plan, its performance measures to address. So again, from a staff perspective, there are ways in which we're bound by the statute, and we need to respond to what's there. In light of this input from the board regarding best available science, and what we do see is yet another conundrum in terms of best available science, identifying something that may be in conflict with the statute from the board's perspective. So I think we're in full understanding of that comment, and we do anticipate that the amendment will identify where cases exist where we're reaching for lofty goals. That would be something that the board would have commented on in these parameters.
Steve?
Yeah, in part I was going to say what Liz said, but it's sort of the same thing. I don't have a lot of problems with a lofty goal, because I think that's better than a non-lofty goal. But having some expectation of the rate of you know, your rate of change, your rate of a performance measure, or at least the direction of are you going in the right direction, I think, and don't really get a sense on a lot of that. So, but the question I have is, I kind of lost track of what happened to invasive species. Is that still one of your performance measures? I know it wasn't reviewed by the technical team, and I know your original goal was zero. Is someone actually measuring the annual rate of invasive species somewhere, or?
So the invasive species performance measure is not part of the ecosystem amendment. It is existing Chapter 4 performance measure, so it's not being revised. So we are kind of keeping it as is. That's why it was not part of the review. And we did, I think back then in 2017, I think when they work on the previous set of performance measures, they did have external reviewers look at the invasive species as well. So the performance measure has a bunch of actually metrics in it, and the zero new invasive species is just one of, I think, three actually. There is one for the fisheries, there is one that has a bunch of submetrics as well for the aquatic vegetation. It's not part of the being like revised.
So if it's an ongoing thing, I'm just wondering, having zero invasive species, is there since we're writing a review, we want to make sure we haven't missed it, is there somewhere an accounting of the number of invasive species, new invasive species somewhere? Or?
You know if it was zero.
Well, we know it's not zero.
Is somebody measuring?
We know that.
The annual assessment of invasive species.
Yeah, Carlton is doing that for the Bay. And I think there was a guy, Davis, that's working on this with crabs. So I think that's how they're doing it. But Tom Carlton, is that his first name? Jim Carlton. Basically, been monitoring that for forever.
I've seen the published data, but I'm not sure if within the Delta, if there's someone keeping tabs, you know, or is it just, oh, we found a nutria and...
I mean, it's in process in making, actually. So we have staff who are subject matter expert on that, who trying to develop that process, have not done it yet. But it's, yeah, we are attempting, like, look at the available literature, like, look at what the other agencies are and, like, what their protocols they have, and trying to combine that. So we, yeah, are trying to approach it and, yeah, have it developed in a year or two.
You know, Steve, Cal Department of Food and Agriculture does it for insects, and they estimate that one new insect a day is coming in. They don't all get established, but there must be somebody that's doing this.
Well, that's what I'm saying. There must be somebody, but I'm still trying to track it down. I think there are in different agencies and different things, and the California Invasive Species Council is doing it for California-wide, but, I mean, if zero new invaders in the Delta is the ultimate goal, then somewhere... someone ought to be measuring that.
Ted Greschholz is the guy at Davis that's been doing this. I don't know if you've contacted him, but that would be, I'd start
we
with him.
Yeah, I don't think.
And all I wanted to, the discussion of lofty goals is fine. I mean, lofty goals are good, but what we're talking about in our memo here is impossible goals, things that simply cannot be achieved, and that's not good science. So that's.
The airlines have a goal of having all their flights leave on time. But they have performance measures of percentage of trips that left on time. So I think with some modest rephrasing, you can have an effective performance measure that is a good indicator of how close you're getting to a lofty goal.
So I think the board is largely comfortable with the memo, the draft memo that's been prepared. So I want to ask someone to make a motion to approve the content of the draft memo. I haven't heard of the need for any edits, so I'm going to just say approve the content of the draft memo as it is.
I still move.
Yeah, I second.
Oh, sorry, Edmund. Maybe I'm jumping ahead.
I just wanted to state in your memo, the panel discussion on rapid environmental change has already occurred. So when you guys are approving it, just to make sure to modify that.
Okay. Okay, so we have a motion to approve the content with minor edits. Is there a second? Vince seconds it. So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Okay. Abstentions? Thank you. And thank you, Jeff and Martina, for working with us through the process. I know that some of our feedback has been challenging for you to implement, but I still think that the discussions have been valuable.
I concur and very much appreciate the input of the board. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So we'll move on to our next agenda item, which is something that we moved from yesterday's agenda, which the science needs assessment, and Jay and Steve will give us an update on that.
I think it's moving along. We had some redrafting of the advanced briefing document recently, within the last month we have two or three redrafts. So it's been cycling through pretty well, and I think it's time for other people to take a look at it and suggest improvements. So please do that. And then hopefully we will have it done. See, the workshop is the end of April, so it'll be nice to have it done February or March. Maybe March.
February is tomorrow.
Well, by the end of February. So please get your comments in soon. Yes.
Yeah, so just I think all of the board members are aware, but a draft document was sent out to us yesterday. Late in the day yesterday. Can I just ask a question? This came up yesterday in some of our discussions. I'm not clear who the audience for the document is. So
the document is a pre-briefing document for workshop participants.
Okay.
And if you look at the document, it outlines the sort of in the format of what the workshop is going to be about, and provides background material and a lot of background reading. The workshop outline is sort of along the lines of, consider it as four parts, and each part will have a plenary and a breakout sessions. So the first question, again, this is focused on the looking forward climate change in particular. So the first part of the workshop is asking the question, what do we know and what can we predict about the future relative to climate change and potentially its impact on other drivers? So what do we really know about the future that we can lock into? The second component is, what does that mean to management and stakeholders? You know, given that you know sea level rise might be this and the temperature might be that and you might get more frequent storms or droughts or whatever, as a manager or stakeholder, what does that mean to you? What do you need to know in order to be able to adapt or manage better under those predicted changes in environment? That's the second component. And the third component, okay, now that we know what managers are and stakeholders really need, what kind of science do we need in order to provide that information to them? What sort of tools could be developed? What kind of forecasts we'd develop? What kind of science needs to be put in place so that we are preemptively being prepared for meeting management and stakeholder needs under that context? And then the fourth component is, given that we now know what the science needs are, what sort of science governance structure, connectivity, and funding do we need in order to make it happen? So that's sort of the four parts of the workshop, and that's sort of the four parts, in essence, of the briefing paper that's being circulated. And I think what we're really looking at this stage for is your input on the content of all of that, the content of the briefing paper. We do have a few references in there, and, of course, there's things referred to like the Delta Plan, the Science Action Agenda, those kinds of things. But also looking at the workshop, are there things we're obviously missing in that context, particularly after yesterday's discussion? So we really want the board input. This is going to be a joint board council / I guess program effort all the way through. So our component of it, we want to make sure that we have a sort of full board input of this. I'm looking at Amanda for a deadline to get the timeline. Is that it's the workshop is coming up late April. In these plenary components of each of these four sections, it could be a plenary speaker, it could be a short panel, but it's sort of to introduce the subject and so forth. So we are looking for names. If there are any individuals that you think, oh, this person really knows what's going on any one of those four types of categories, that's the kind of, we're looking for suggestions of names at this stage. And maybe Amanda knows the timeline better than me, because I think we're trying by the end of February to have the final, this briefing paper more or less finalized. So you're looking for comments within the next 10 days, a week, or?
Yeah, so the version that you all have that you all received yesterday, if you could provide comments to Edmund by next Friday, that would be really helpful, because we just need to kind of start getting things. We really need to get this wrapped up so that we can do everything we've got to do in order to kind of get this out and get it posted and ADA compliance and all that kind of stuff that we have to kind of build into the timeline for this. So if you could provide comments to Edmund by noon on Friday next week. And then also, I'll echo what Steve said, we really are looking for ideas for both plenary speakers and panelists, where I think we're still kind of figuring out for each of the four sections where a panel makes more sense versus like just one speaker. So if you can send any of those comments to Edmund as well, that would be great. And then also I think we're anticipating needing facilitators for some of like the breakout and work sessions. So if there are people that you think would be particularly good at facilitating certain breakout sessions, that would be really helpful too.
So I'll let Tracy go ahead, and I have a couple of comments too.
So we've just gotten this. By noon next Friday, to me, seems way too rushed, given the discussion we had yesterday and the depth of discussion we had with the panel about the need to be able to think really deeply about this issue. And to me, I'm just skimming this right now, what we got last night, and it's, you know, we have a lot, I talked about it yesterday, we have a lot of convergence to do between these two efforts. And this, again, I haven't read it in detail, but it seems to say we just have to go through a workshop and we can define the science needs and we can get this done and we'll be there. And that's very different from what we discussed yesterday, I think. So I don't know how the rest of the board feels, but I feel like a week from now is not enough time for the people that have been working on this other paper to get together, talk about how we're going to assimilate the workshop inputs and see if, because I don't want us coming off with two different board products that are very divergent or very inconsistent, I guess. So I'm concerned about that, and maybe I'm overly concerned.
I think that's a real reasonable concern. I see them as being serial efforts rather than parallel efforts, and certainly, well, but I see them as serial in the sense that the panel we had yesterday and the other document really are the motivators for, okay, and this is sort of, well, what do you want to do about it? And this is part of a broader discussion of what do you want to do about it that doesn't just have just us. And it doesn't require us to have final statements at the time of the pre-briefing document, certainly, because we're not the final authority in the end of it. So it behooves us all, I think, to try to work into the advanced briefing paper some ideas on it to stimulate discussion. But we don't have to have a final judgment in terms of when this comes out. It would be maybe useful for the the motivating document, which is what I see is the yesterday's panel in that document, to have maybe some thoughts leading forward, but I don't see that we have to be real tight about it. My guess is that the timeline, we could add another week, and it would be just fine.
The way I view this is that the yesterday's panel and the white paper you guys did is sort of the broad overview. This is what's got to be done on all facets of things and ecology and changing and so forth. And this is far more narrowly focused on one particular change and one driver. And let's follow that through. We don't need in this paper, we absolutely do not want to have any answers or solutions. We want to have the questions there that we want this workshop to address. So, and I think, you know, if in going through this process, then in 2 months or 3 months' time, we will have some specific answers to a specific sort of question. And then one could argue how it folds back in. It's sort of like a scenario in the topic we had yesterday is, okay, under climate change, you know, people want to make the science questions are making predictions about X and Y. That's what managers want to know. This is the kind of discussion that was led to in terms of how one might change the science to affect those particular questions. Then one could go back to the broader, does this have any broader impact, or is this particularly narrowed in on this topic? You know, so I see them as a different scale of looking at things. And on the broad, overall, all-encompassing, you know, scale versus a specific applied example of that. And again, looking, it's just, you know, a week or 2 weeks doesn't matter, but I think it matters to Amanda. But but I think, again, that the first couple of pages on here, I think it's 5 or 6 pages that outline the workshop. The rest is background material on what we know about the current structures of science governance and things like that within the Delta. I think 6 of the 7 appendices are related to what I would call science governance in its current mode in the Delta. Not making any suggestions about any solutions. It's just a state of what our state of knowledge is on that topic. Anyway, so.
Yeah, so I guess just to revisit from yesterday, I was really struck by some of the points that were made, and it came up today, too, about building trust, about having managers, stakeholders, decision makers, you know, interacting with scientists. And I don't have specifics right now because I haven't had a chance to look at the paper, but I hope that some of those approaches can be used in this workshop. I guess just in terms of timeline, I think giving us at least an additional week, I mean, we really are just seeing it now, and I think if you want to have thoughtful responses from the board and appropriate time to review and reflect on it, as well as reflect on the session that we had yesterday, it would be better to wait at least for a 2-week window.
How about if you can get me comments by this Friday, by the 7th, a week from today? Wonderful. If you need more time, that's fine. Maybe with a final deadline of, I guess that's what, the 15th, 14th?
The 14th.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fine. And you will note when you do go through it, there is really just kind of placeholder language about what happened, about the conversation that happened yesterday. So, yeah, I think there's definitely room, and we should definitely add a lot more information about what we heard yesterday and how that can inform the workshop participants moving forward. And I do think that we should, and I think there is a place in there to add a link to the webcast and to all the documents that came out of that, too. So.
Great. Thank you. Let's see. Tracy, did you have another question? Anybody else?
I have a thought.
Oh, go ahead, Joy.
I was looking for anything about wetlands, and I found it in Appendix C. I was happy to see wetlands called out.
But the way that the needed expertise is described doesn't quite capture the essence of yesterday's discussion, where we really need to be able to communicate with decision makers. I would urge the writers here to use the terminology of the ecosystem services provided by wetlands, and there's another topic of aquatic ecosystems and avian ecology and invasive species. So what are the services that a decision maker might be interested in? That's the kind of expertise, and it takes more than just somebody who knows the ecology. It takes someone who can translate that to what that characterization does for people or doesn't do for people. So I'll send a note by Friday.
Yeah, thank you very much for making suggestions along those lines.
Yeah, I think the and the suggestions that I think would be most useful in many respects, one is just the workshop itself, you know, the content of it and the format and stuff like that. And the other is the paper as itself, as a briefing paper. Are we providing sufficient briefing for workshop participants, and what's missing in that? Are we going in the wrong direction? The one thing that we have discussed a lot, and when I say we, there's a large, it's not just us and Amanda, there's a large group of people working on this, but there was a lot of discussion about what the management topics are, what sort of themes would we be looking at questions within. And they're listed on page 9, water supply reliability, water quality, delta flows, restoration, non-native species, things like that. All of those were taken from the Delta Plan. That's how those themes were actually taken. Just hearing Mark's presentation today, where he had 7 management themes that he came up with in the monitoring program, they more or less align with this. We might want to use his management themes, where he spent a lot of time on, and see if there's some in here that might be better said that way. But anyway, that's where those themes are, and that's where we're commenting on Joy's comment that are there things that we've missed in terms of that, you know, those particular topics. And that's how the breakout groups would work along those particular themes. So.
Hey, Joe?
Just a quick question. Now, this is about the long-term science needs in the lens of climate change.
Right.
Now, there are other issues coming into long-term science, like urbanization, change of agricultural practices, and those type of things. But they are large-scale ecosystem issues. Are they being slowly incorporated?
I think they should be included.
Okay.
You know, the document so far and a lot of the discussion is, of course, dominated, I think, maybe too much by climate change. But there are other big changes that are going to occur in the Delta. And the science is going to have to address all of them altogether, not just climate change. So I very much appreciate your comment, Joe, and I think we really need to reflect that in the document and in the workshop.
Yeah, and that came up in Jeff Mount's comments yesterday. I mean, in that case, he was focusing on the stressors and the fact that climate change was sort of interacting with an already stressed system.
We have urbanization, as Joe mentioned. We have changes in infrastructure that are often being proposed. We have changes in regulatory frameworks. Voluntary settlement agreements have tremendous, you know, implications for science. We have new invasive species. We have quite a few things that are changing. Technologies, new technologies. All sorts of things that are changing. And climate change is just one big one of all of these, and the science really has to address them all together.
And here's where we can debate, because I agree all of those are very important drivers, but if you try and run a two-day workshop looking at all of those, it would take 2 days just to summarize what the expectations, what the expected changes might be and what the expected drivers.
That's, and that's where
we just might disagree a bit. And the other reason for climate was, in terms of the basic drivers, all the other ones you mentioned, in many respects, are controllable within the Delta. To some, what's that? It's all debatable. You could build a wall. I hate to say that, but you could build a wall. But I mean, technically speaking, they are somewhat controllable. You can control urbanization. I don't mean in any realistic sense, but I mean in a theoretical sense. And this other one is a sort of within the delta. It's hard to control the force. So anyway, the bottom line is you try it on one thing that we have pretty good idea what the expected. You could have done this on urbanization. You could have done this on changes in agriculture predicted. You know, you could have used any driver to run this workshop, and as a way to see whether if it gets the kind of questions and structures you're thinking about or not.
Okay. I wanted to go on to John.
Liz, can I clarify this? Now I'm confused. Do you want to focus on climate, or do you want the other drivers?
Personally, I think in half an hour you can cover them all, because everybody pretty much knows what these drivers are. And we all live, we swim every day in the climate change discussion. And this is the thrust of the workshop on the science needs assessment should be, well, what kind of things should we do about it in terms of organizing science? And okay. So all these other things are important, but I don't think, I mean, they need to be mentioned. But I don't think all the drivers really merit more than half an hour, 45 minutes of discussion, given the difficulty of actually figuring out what to do about it.
So in our commentary, do you want us to comment on the other drivers?
I think if you feel strongly that it should be included in some way, the way it's worded in there now is that climate impact on these other drivers. And as long as you have some, and it's forward-looking, so we're looking 20 years down the road kind of predictions. And I think that's something that if it's something you should be, think it should be part of this, then say so.
John Calloway.
So I just wanted to come back. Steve, you mentioned the audience is the workshop participants, but we didn't talk about who will be there at the workshop. So it seems like it's primarily scientists and managers, but also potentially decision makers. It seems like it's mostly managers and scientists.
Well, and decision makers. And the thing that's not in here is that the 2 days is followed by a half a day meeting with the decision makers, like the Science Enterprise workshop was.
Okay, so
there is a line in here about the audience.
All right. So, Edmund, did you have something you wanted to jump in on? I saw you grab your...
At this point, it's like past the point, but when Steve was mentioning how Mark identified management themes and how they align with what is in the current version of the paper, the reason for that, too, is that those themes are actually based off the Delta Plan, too, but they just slightly diverge due to different interpretations. But I think it's good to align it to create better synergies between the monitoring enterprise and what you guys are trying to achieve with the science needs.
Thank you. One
quick last thing. An additional reason to include some of these other drivers of change and types of change is that all of those are going to be expensive decisions that are related to the Delta, related to science, related to stakeholders. And if we want to motivate people to pay for all this, we got to have some acknowledgement of their interests in change as well. So I think it's important to be more than just climate change. At least notionally, right? I know people like to talk about the weather, but there's more than just that.
All right. Anything more, Amanda? Does it seem like our schedule will work out well? And
yeah, I think we can make this work. I mean, again, you know, it's always helpful to get comments sooner than later, but I think we can absolutely make the 14th work. So. Yeah, and then with that extra week, really be thinking about who we should ask to serve on panels and speak at the plenary and help facilitate. So,
thank you. Okay, so our next agenda item is to revisit our plan for future science reviews, and so we have a couple of documents here. We have a document that has been sort of iterative and we've added to over time with ideas for different types of topics for reviews. And then we also asked for some stakeholder input, stakeholder feedback. So just the way that we've often shared our prospectuses with stakeholders and asked them to comment, we have that feedback too. So we have an opportunity to either identify some topics for the next reviews. We can also, you know, continue to hold this, you know, revisit this discussion or even push it off until the new Delta ISB members are in place. I think part of our motivation for doing this was we had hoped to maybe initiate at least one review before new board members came in so that they would have something to sort of jump into and a model for at least how the board has operated in the past. So I guess at this point, I'd just like your feedback on the list of topics that we've identified, whether folks feel like there's one or more that they'd like to move forward. And I'd be especially interested in if we are going to move something forward that a current member of the board be identified to lead the process as we move into a new board composition. So, any comments or feedback? Oh, sorry.
In looking at this, I think there's one that really stands out for a variety of reasons, and that's the connections upstream and to the bay. And the reason I say that is, first of all, with the monitoring review, we're seeing examples where the Delta monitoring program and the Bay monitoring program are indicating a lot of logical connections, tidal wetlands being the most obvious. But I also think for the new board members is that following our IEP review, following the monitoring review, that this would really give them a fast familiarization with what's going on in the Delta. It will be an interesting review to do. You know, everybody talks about mountains to the sea, and that's about as far as you hear it, actually. So I think this is a real logical review. You know, the people that Joe and Tom and Steve and Jay are staying on the board, you know, individually or in context of working together, they could do it fine.
Right. It's a good topic for kind of understanding the systems and the linkages, both from the upstream as well as into the bay. Other comments, Steve?
Yeah, I like that one. It's broad. It's big and broad, and that's not a bad thing. But that's just, you know, have to think about how it works. The only other one that came up in my mind, looking particularly at the feedback from the stakeholders, 7 of 10 of them said climate change, and part of maybe I'll have to refine it after our previous discussion. But part of the concept of this workshop was that there would be a series of high-level questions that would come out of the workshop, which might lead us to say, well, what do we really know in that field? And we could do the scientific needs and under the concept of climate change as a review. And I know at least all of us have some, the remaining board members have some interest or expertise in that area. So that's the other one that kind of comes out, and that could be formed by the output of the April workshop.
So I just want, Vince, the connections upstream into the bay, that's when we said there are 7 things we should consider in each of the reviews. That's not a review topic in and of itself. That's every review we do should consider that among 6 other, you know, as well as 6 other things. But it sounded like you were suggesting that as a review in and of itself. I wasn't clear.
Yeah, I am suggesting it as a review in and of itself. Just, you know, in other words, just documenting when people talk about mountains to the sea, what are they doing about it? You know, is there anything that we see a conscious efforts? You know, for example, this thing with the tidal wetlands to me is crazy that you've got 2 separate programs doing this when they're going to run continuously. And with climate change, it's going to be moving up anyway.
Yeah. Okay, that's fine. Because we had, what we said was there are 7 attributes that we should consider.
Right. And one of those also was climate change. So, you know, so we've been trying to incorporate those themes, but... And there was wasn't there recently the workshop about connections?
At the State of the Estuary. At the State of the Estuary, there was a plenary session.
Don't you have one coming up on the 18th or something?
Yeah. There's that's not so much Bay Delta connections. It's just overall connectivity, but broader, you know, sort of terrestrial connectivity with the Delta and connectivity issues in general. But that will be part of the discussion.
And Liz, excuse me. The biggest thing I see, it's going to bring the board. The new board members up to date on what's going on, because you know they'll be looking at the past reviews in terms of doing this. Mm-hmm. I just think it's a logical one to start with, and mm-hmm. that's just.
I will add in talking with potential candidates, they are very interested to know what future reviews might be. That's probably almost every one of them's question is what's the board working on and what are likely things that might be happening into the future.
I see a couple, so we'll go to Tom and then Jay.
I was thinking, you mentioned climate change as a review, but maybe it'd be more interesting to extend it to include all the drivers that we were just talking about. And
drivers of change.
Yeah, as it pertains to the Delta, because, you know, things like population, the agricultural industry. Are huge.
Yeah, when I think of climate change, I'm not talking about climate science at all. I'm talking about the, you know, the given the driver, what are the impact, and the impact on other drivers is mm-hmm. a big component of that.
Well, then why not include the other drivers in the...
I think that's a good idea, although if we say, let's do a review of all the drivers affecting ecosystem change, that's... It's everything, isn't it?
It sounds like a big topic, but the thing is, it's not that we get into the climate change. We're looking at these as drivers, and making a list of what they are and what their potential impacts are.
Because the Millennium Report and others point out the six main drivers of ecosystem change, you know, and they are things that we're talking about. One is, you know, the pollution, the habitat. Alteration, resource use, invasive species is one, and that's the one we're working on. Climate change is another, and everything falls from those key drivers. So,
well, let's go to Jay, and then I want to give the Dick and Joy an opportunity, but let's hear from Jay first.
I don't particularly care what the next review topics are for the new board, but I do care that they accomplish several goals. In terms of performance measures, they should acquaint the new people with the broad range of mess that they have to deal with here in as merciful a way as possible, but you know, get them acquainted with it. And it should be something that is useful to the science and management community. I can't think of any other criteria. And so I would recommend that we sort of take this list and evaluate them in terms of those two criteria and any others that people might have in mind. And I think that will screen out a bunch of these and leave us with just a couple. And that's probably sufficient.
Joy or Dick, do you want to add to the conversation?
I could imagine brainstorming all the drivers and their possible interactions as they a productive thing to do. It would just be, you know, an effort to merge expert knowledge and look for possible danger signs and possible good interactions. It would also educate the board tremendously, and that would be one of Jay's goals.
For you to dial has been exceeded. Please hang up and try your call again.
Did we lose somebody?
I'm still here, but I should certainly...
Yeah. We may have lost Joy. Excuse me? Oh. D- Dick, are you still on the line?
Yes, I'm still on the line. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Joy, okay. are you on the line? Okay. So, okay, well, hopefully Joy can call back in. All right, so sorry to interrupt you, Dick. So you were saying that brainstorming the drivers could be a productive process and would also provide opportunities to educate the board?
Right.
And Joy, are you back?
I'm back. I hit the wrong thing when I was looking for the mute button.
Okay.
Then I misdialed and I got a hotline for who really wanted to talk to me. I was just thinking that the restoration of habitats and services might be a useful topic.
So, I guess this has always been sort of a challenging discussion to work through. I mean, I'm sort of leaning toward looking to the board for a volunteer to draft a prospectus maybe on one or two of these topics, since the prospectus is sort of the next step in the process. And I see sort of, I don't know, two or three different ways to go. So the connections upstream into the bay, the broad topic of climate change, an even broader topic of drivers of change in the Delta. Those seem to be the three that resonate with the board. Would somebody or a team of two be willing to draft a prospectus on any of those topics? Tracy, do you have a question, Tom, or is your...
Oh, no, okay.
He was volunteering.
Okay. Then, yeah.
Well, you know, I was thinking when we started 9.5 years ago, Phil Eisenberg and Randy Fiorini, that was the first thing they asked, prioritize the stressors. We didn't want to do it, and you know, I think passing it on to the new board members is really, when we talk about drivers, that's essentially what we're doing. Now, we're not asking them to prioritize, but that was the first thing that we had.
And Steve?
Yeah, I'm going to go back to a little bit what Jay said about, you know, doing reviews that people care about, and I think that's what he was saying. And back when we did that retreat, you know, we did bring in a lot of people. We had a lot of input into our reviews, and we also did a reasonably extensive survey. And then that's what has driven most of the reviews that we're currently working on. And then IEP came in as part of that sort of subsequent follow-up. Now, I know we've sent this around, and I think we've publicized this, and we got some comments back on this from 10 stakeholders or so. So I'm just opening the door. I wonder if we should do something more comprehensive or more thorough to see what is what others may think. We don't need to do it, but if we're following Jay's thing, we could do something and really have that information so that by the time the new board members come on, they have a really clear idea, what the management community. Or we can just ignore that and go and
Asking for more stakeholder feedback? Because we have 10 or so responses here, but we reached out to, I don't know, how many people? 20.
Jay, do you have an...
I think we have stakeholder feedback.
There? I mean, I don't think we're going to hear anything from anybody else that's going to enlighten us on this problem. I think we should just pick a couple of these things and draw them out of a hat if you need to, but I do think it would be cruel for us not to leave the new board with any initial mission.
Yeah.
I would caution that the new initial mission might not want to make it too huge. You know, don't lead them into the weeds. but give them something that forces them to learn a bunch about the breadth of the system and the breadth of people you got to deal with and the breadth of problems in a way that's important, because all of our things should be important, but not so important and weedy that, you know, we just slam them into a wall or down into a black hole.
I don't think we're going to do that.
Give them something, because if you ask them, if you say, well, we couldn't decide, and they're left to do it on their own, they're in a terrible position to do it, and it's going to be a very painful and unproductive conversation for them.
Yes, it's a painful conversation for us, or it seems like we haven't been able to make progress. So again, I go back to, I think the connectivity to upstream in the Bay and drivers of change, which can include climate change, are two broad topics that would acquaint the new board with the system. They would be useful to the science and management community. They do relate to a Delta plan. I mean, not explicitly, but there are ways to link those things to the Delta plan. And I guess I won't be the decider for the board, but I would suggest that we move in those directions. And John has a comment.
I'd simply remind us all that our reviews are intended to focus on the use of science in support of adaptive management in the Delta. And I think that's a useful filter to apply to these things we're talking about, because it's not immediately obvious that that would be a guiding principle in these reviews. So I think they need to be tuned with that in mind.
And Liz, I was just going to say, I mean, there's four people that are going to remain on the board, and they're going to be the mentors to the new board members, depending on how much Delta experience the new board members have. So I would leave it up to them to mostly suggest the next incipient reviews and to help frame them up. We certainly that are leaving the board will help, and we'll be available as resources for new board members afterwards. And I would just remind people again, we've mentioned it here, we took a long time to get going. When we started, we spent, I don't know, was it a year and a half before we had any products out or something? I mean, it was kind of, I guess, almost embarrassing. But it won't be that bad, because there will be a carryover of people that have deep experience. But still, the new board members are going to need time to get up to speed. So Jay's advice that we do something that's not just huge, that we give them something that's workable, I think is a really good one. The other thing I wanted to point out was, we keep talking about all these drivers and how they affect ecosystems. If you look at the stakeholder comments, a number of them they're questioning, I think, why are we always focused on ecosystems? Why aren't we looking at agriculture? Why aren't we looking at, you know, so other attributes of the system should not necessarily, you know, ecosystems should not be our only focus. And obviously water supply and reliability, and, you know, so just keep that in mind as we talk about this. I think that we keep assuming that it's going to be an ecosystem-driven process, and I don't think we should assume that.
Yeah, thank you, Tracy. So maybe what I would suggest is that we revisit this topic at our next meeting, and that the four members of the board who are excuse me, I'm losing my voice. The four members of the board who are staying on, maybe we would leave it to you to present the full board with your thoughts about next review topics at our meeting in March.
That way we can't blame the board, the rest of you guys leaving for their...
Well, no. Friends. I mean, Tracy's right. We're willing to help, but those four members are sort of And Edmund, I believe you had a comment for me.
Yeah, can we schedule that for April? That's going to be the in-person one. The planning future reviews, where the four members revisit what they want to take on.
Sure. Yeah.
That sounds like a great idea.
You think it'll be better to have that discussion in person.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you have more time, but we look forward to hearing your thoughts. Okay. So so that wraps up all of our agenda items for the present. The next thing on our list is to prepare for upcoming Delta ISB meetings. And I just want to, I guess, remind everyone, the IEP workshop is March 18th through the 20th. And I think Vince, Dick, Steve, and Tracy are registered or are planning to register. Are other members of the board thinking about that? Or okay. Yeah. So anyway, so the first thing is just the reminder of the IEP workshop. We have decided to make the March 20th meeting a teleconference. And the idea is that anybody who's in town for the IEP workshop, that you would serve as our local hosts for that meeting, which would be held here in Sacramento. That's right. Yeah, we had decided to do that anyway, just because of logistics of Lake Natoma Inn. It's easier for people to come in. As in terms of agenda items for March 20th, that would include ESSA presentation number 4, a report out on the IEP workshop from anybody who attended, and probably regular updates in terms of our progress on different aspects of Delta ISB business. So everybody clear on March 20th. And then the meeting after that will be April 7th, which is a Tuesday meeting, just to remind everyone. And that would be a full day meeting. That will also be the first official meeting for our new intern, Cheryl Patel. And at least part of that meeting will be in closed session to discuss the candidates for the Delta lead scientist. And it sounds like we'll also make sure that we have a follow-on discussion about future reviews and catch up on other aspects of business we're working on. Questions about April 7th? Okay. So that brings us to follow-up items from Edmund. So he'll summarize actions that were taken today and activities as we move into the future.
Yes. So for the Delta Lead Scientist report, I have that John Calloway will send more information about the Estuarine Connectivity Symposium, and he'll also send out the executive summary of the integrated modeling effort by the Integrated Modeling Steering Committee. There is an upcoming workshop by the Integrated Modeling Steering Committee, and John was going to check in to see if there's an ability to broadcast at least the presentation aspect of it. The workshop will be interactive with breakout sessions, so it's probably not going to be fully webcast, but he'll look into that based on a request from Joe Fernando. At the meeting during the executive officer report, there was a mention of an interest to have DWR come to an ISB meeting to receive feedback on the EIR structure for the Delta Conveyance Project, and also to have a meeting when new members come on board to provide them a history of the project. At the ISB meeting yesterday, the council also provided an overview of the priorities, including the communications plan. Tom Holzer has some feedback to make sure that social sciences are incorporated up front. And Steve Brandt also made a suggestion that ISB practices for science communication, such as the one-pagers, are considered in that communication plan. So we'll make sure that the project leads are aware of the ISB comments from today, or from yesterday. Yesterday, you guys also took action to approve the content of the memo with edits summarized, or the edits that you guys talked about yesterday for submission to the Social Science Task Force. Members have until Monday to provide any edits that you would like to have into the memo. Any questions so far or anything to add? Yesterday, there was a great panel discussion on rapid environmental change. Dick and the other writers should start thinking about next steps for rewriting that report, including who is the audience and what is the desired outcome from the paper. And then a suggestion from a panelist was the audience could be the Department of Fish and Wildlife, the State Water Resources Control Board, and DWR. I think Tracy had a joke that Joe and Vince are in charge of thinking about who the audience is, but I think that was a joke. Correct, Tracy? And then today, we talked about the science needs assessment workshop, and then the board members should review the report of the pre-workshop briefing report and see how what you guys learned yesterday could be incorporated and what your thoughts are on the paper, on the pre-workshop paper, including potential speakers and facilitators. It'll be great if you can get comments in to staff by February 7th, but you have until February 14th. Today, for the monitoring review, there were a lot of comments. So we're going to send out the report after the meeting. So please provide comments by February 18th, if possible. Some of the comments discussed today came from Jay, who said he wants more information on the network analysis and a better digestion of what those clusters mean, and to break out that network diagram between state, federal, and local agencies and universities, and to see what degree of involvement are involved. And Joy?
I wouldn't want to state those as things that I would require of them. Mm-hmm. Just to be clear.
Okay.
Because they're probably, as you said, already over budget. But.
Mm-hmm. So if you do want to send them in those comments, then we just want to make sure that it's captured. Or it's considered. And today, Liz made a motion with a second from Vince to approve the content of the memorandum for the ecosystem amendment for submission to the Council with minor edits. And I think, Tracy, you said you abstained from the vote. That was a joke. Okay, so I'll clarify for the record that. And then for planning for future reviews, the four remaining members of the Delta ISB should consider what review they would think the new board should take on, and whether they're willing to draft a prospectus if there's a strong idea that they would like to pursue. Did I miss anything, or is there anything that anyone wants to add?
I think you got everything. As always, very, very thorough and complete. Okay, so now we have an opportunity for public comments, and we invite members of the public to comment on matters that are not on the agenda, but within the subject matter of the Delta ISB. Would anybody from the public like to step forward? Okay, I think we don't have any public comments, and so I would like to move that we adjourn the meeting. Oh, yes, and wish Madison well, and hope that we'll have a continued relationship with you as you move into the next phase of your career.
Thank you, Liz. Thanks, everyone. Hopefully, I will be in touch with all of you.
Yes. All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.